Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. And with the draft today, I thought I owed you a list of the players I think are most likely to fall to number 27 and who I'd be most excited at the Ravens getting at that spot. We won't assume any trade downs. You can get into permutations of what might happen, and they are dizzying, and including, you know, potentially trading this year's number one for a next year's number one for the Browns if they would be interested in doing that to draft Shedeur Sanders were he to fall. So we're just going to talk the Ravens pick at number 27, who are 7 players that I think make a lot of sense at that spot. And before we get into the players exactly, there are a few position groups that just don't make sense for the pick. I don't think it would make sense to draft a running back. I don't think it makes sense to draft a guard or center where the fifth-year option value drops significantly. So that's something that the Ravens probably will not do. They have in the past. They drafted Ben Grubbs at number 29, well-known in 2007. Quite a long time ago, but other positions now with the fifth-year option now, and that did not exist at that time, make a lot more sense. So without further ado, I'll go into each of these players. I'll try and go into a little bit about them and why I like them, and then talk our way through the big 7 here. So the first, I'll talk to 2 guys who have a relatively low chance of making it to number 27. This is one of my criteria. They had to have some chance. Doesn't have to be super high, but it's got to be at least moderate. I do think at least 1 and probably 2 or 3 of the players I'm going to name have a good chance to make it to 27. But I'm going to start with Kelvin Banks, offensive tackle from Texas, might end up at guard for the Ravens. He would be drafted. He would be a left tackle replacement for Ronnie Stanley, probably come 2027 or 28. I would expect him to start at left guard until then. And that would be a very big need filled. This is really the way I look at the draft. Don't look at 2025 needs alone. The Ravens, as long as they have Lamar Jackson, are going to be a very good team. So they need to plan multiple years out to make sure they have a chance each time they make the playoffs to go all the way. And obviously, it depends on Lamar being healthy. It depends on a lot of health factors on the team. But Lamar being healthy, as we've seen in the past, is the single biggest factor. So Kelvin Banks would be a great pickup. I know a lot of people think, well, they have a left tackle. Why would they need to do that? Well, they have no tackle depth either. That's another problem. Both Josh Jones and McCary moved on. Banks, to my way of thinking, is the best pure left tackle in this draft. And I believe Will Campbell is going to be a great offensive lineman wherever he plays. I think it could be a case where he doesn't end up sticking at left tackle. Some people think that at Banks, by the way, too. But he'll be a great, maybe a Hall of Fame left guard. And so I understand why some people would want him higher, and he certainly will be gone by the time the Ravens pick. So I don't think it's unreasonable to leave him out of there. Anyway, Kelvin Banks, offensive tackle from Texas, would be my number one choice there. Of the other guys who I think have a low chance to be there, probably my second favorite guy is Jahdae Barron, the cornerback slash free safety. Now, he's pretty much played corner so far, but he could potentially play free safety. And that flexibility is quite valuable. I actually think it makes more sense to start him at corner anyway. It would bolster the Ravens' strength at that position. They have a lot of age with Awuzie and Humphrey there. They also have Wiggins, who's young, but they're rolling off some first contract players who are cheaper. JAD in particular, I don't think is going to make the team if they draft a corner. TJ Tampa, they need to find out what they have, but he's a player that may or may not be good enough, and we'll have to We'll have to see how that works out. I don't think it means don't draft another corner. And I certainly think if you're going to draft a corner who can also play free safety, you might have something really exciting anyway. Barron could be used a lot of ways for the 2025 Ravens. He could be used as a split field player. He could immediately step into a starting corner role. Damn Chidobe Awuzie, send him to the third corner position. That certainly could happen. Wiggins, the Ravens have with Humphrey as well, have brought their corners along slowly with some rotational play. They might do that with a player like Barron. I would also say the chance of Barron getting to the Ravens at number 27 is fairly low. I think the ESPN simulator had it at 10 or 15%. It was in that range. And so I don't think the chance is particularly high of him getting that point. He's very highly thought of. And a lot of people probably have him as CB1 in this draft. So I think it's unlikely. But if he got to 27, I'd be very excited about it. Ball skills guy, by the way, be a great free safety if that's where he ends up. I think he'll also be a good cornerback. So that's either way you win. Now let's go on to two guys who I think there is a moderate chance of them getting there. And that doesn't mean I like both of these guys better than some of the others we're going to talk about. So I got to be careful about how exactly I would organize this. But Kenneth Grant, the interior defensive lineman from Michigan, is a possibility. I think there is a moderate chance, probably right around 50%, plus or minus 10, that he makes it to number 27. He's a outstanding tackler. He'd be a guy that I think would be... penetrates extremely well. You'd be getting a lot of the replacement for Michael Pierce out of him. He and Mason Graham together were terrific at Michigan. He's a good player on his own, and he's a guy I think would make sense for the Ravens. They need to get a big piece of the interior defensive line draft in this time around. There hasn't been a good interior defensive line draft in a while. In fact, in the last four drafts, Travis Jones has been the only player that the Ravens have drafted there. And Kenneth Grant is one of two players that I think is it represents significant skill and would be of value. There's one other I'm going to name on the list as well. And there are about 20 guys that I really like on the defensive line. It's a very layered draft. They can get them in almost any round. But getting a first-round interior defensive lineman, it's not too high to draft one. And the Ravens, as they're constituted currently, really need to magnify the one-on-one abilities for their other three spots along their typical four-man rush unit. So that's Matabike, Owe, and Van Noy. And they need to give those guys one-on-one matchups. The way you do that is by guaranteeing you have a high-quality player in that one-tech spot who commands double teams. And Travis Jones undeniably does this. He needs to be kept fresh. But another fear, and you better be concerned about it now, is that Travis Jones is a year away from not being a Raven anymore. His fourth year is now. He'll be a free agent. I guess the franchise tag is a possibility. There's no fifth-year option. Travis Jones, a third-round pick. Unbelievable. Great deal. But the Ravens are going to need to find a way to replace him. They're already replacing Michael Pierce. So this would be an ideal draft to maybe get both a pass-rushing 3/5 tech. And I don't really want to go out and get a 5-tech period. The position is dying in the NFL, but a pass rushing 3-tech or a guy who can affect the game significantly on early downs as a 3-tech, that's a possibility. And you definitely want a nose tackle in this draft. There are lots of options at nose. They're all over layered through the draft, as I mentioned. But Kenneth Grant, the first round, perfectly reasonable pick. Moderate chance he'll be there at 27. And I think the Ravens probably would take him with consideration, meaning there would have to be some other players would have to be off the board. Certainly if Barron and Grant are both there, I'm taking Barron over Grant, for example. If Kelvin Banks is there, I'm probably taking Kelvin Banks over him. And if the pass rushers I want are there, it's a real question. It becomes a real question because you do need to fix that defensive line now. In addition to the guys I've lost, Urban is out there as a free agent. I think the Ravens probably have a handshake to make a handshake agreement with Brent Urban. That Brent Urban wants to return, as I understand it, for another year. And it would be he would be a player who could certainly fill a need for the Ravens as the fifth defensive lineman, played a fair number of sacks and played quite well last year. So I'd be happy to have him back. He does play a position that is reduced in importance. The Ravens don't play a lot of base defense. And why not? Because they lead most of the time. You don't play a lot of base defense. You play base defense when you're trying to stop the run on early downs. That's the typical time you do it. So if you look at any score sheet you've got of the Ravens, as I have throughout the years, is you'll see that Brent Urban will often play a fair number of snaps in the first half, then he'll play very little in the second half if the Ravens have a, you know, a two-touchdown lead or they're leading by 17 or something like that. So the Ravens are one of the few teams in the NFL, because of the way their offense is constituted, that could use a closeout player. So that's the one reason I'm not completely opposed to a guy like Derek Harmon, who I think there's a lot of risk with. Terrible tackler. But he does get a lot of pressure, and he'd be a guy that would be very disruptive on passing downs. And if you're trying to close out a game, you can go with four faster pass rushers who are smaller along the line of scrimmage and take your chances with whoever gets a one-on-one. And then a guy like Harmon would be very valuable to replace the nose in such a situation. If you think back years, you've heard me always talk about the race car package, which would just have four outside linebackers on the field instead of you don't, the concept of a defensive lineman goes away at that point. You just have guys who are kicking inside and can still be effective penetrating on a pure passing down and making things miserable on the quarterback. So anyway, Kenneth Grant, a moderate chance to make it. The other moderate is a guy I really love, and I've made no bones about this. Nick Emenwori, the free safety from South Carolina. He's a terrific football player, and there's Emenwori fatigue. There is Emenwori slander in a certain sense going on. And I think that the easiest way I can talk about this is look at who Malachi Starks is as a player right now and who Nick Emenwori is. And Nick Emenwori allowed a 37.1 passer rating against. He is raw as hell at safety. You can see mistakes being made when he plays. But he's a pretty good tackler. He has the best measurables pretty much ever at the position. Had someone point out to me that Mays a few years ago, and I'm trying to remember his first name, had a 431.40. And this is a strong safety we're talking about, and had a similar kind of a weight coming out of school. So he was almost built like a linebacker, but he certainly was a freak at the time. He didn't end up having anything in terms of a pro career. But the notion that Emenwori has not produced as a pass defender so far is ridiculous. Yes, he's got shortcomings. Yes, he makes mistakes. But the 37.1 passer rating speaks for itself, folks. I look for basically passing coverage, metrics that corroborate physical gifts. And he has both in spades. That's exactly what Nate Wiggins had last year. People found ways to complain about Wiggins too. He's now well on his way to being a Pro Bowl cornerback. Emenwori, I believe, is going to be an outstanding player. I hope that the Ravens, if they get him, will just stick him on the back end and leave him there. He'll be a great last line of defense on some plays, run plays in particular. He can make sure that they are kept safe. And if you have another guy on the back end who's splitting the field with him, he should be an enormous help in terms of making tackles back there if there are some misses. So I think he gives the Ravens a lot of real safety value. I think he has all the ball hawkery you can ask for to start with. There are guys in this draft who have more. Billy Bowman, Watts, they have tremendous additional ball hawking. They don't have the physical gifts that Emenwori has. I think of all the guys, he's a moderate. He addresses an enormous position of need for the Ravens at safety, where they need to get at least one additional half field player, and ideally a pure free safety to play the back end, so that Hamilton can move up closer to the line of scrimmage again, be the slot guy, and they can use, frankly, the versatility of all their guys. It may be that they want Hamilton on the back end for some third downs, and they want to have Ardarius Washington close to the line of scrimmage. Maybe that Hamilton is a better first and second down player. When you're worried about the run, you're worried about wide receiver screens, that's a great time to have Hamilton on a flex tight end in the slot. 12 personnel is a great time to have Hamilton and Big Nickel. I think the Ravens have lost a lot by making Hamilton a pure free safety. And I think unlocking Hamilton's versatility value is one of the keys to this year's draft. The Ravens have multiple chances. There are several ball hawks that are available. Emenwori represents the best of multiple elements that the Ravens have available. I would be thrilled, by the way, to get Watts, Xavier Watts of Notre Dame, I'm talking about in the second round. It'd be a reach draft and it'd be a reach pick in the first round. And I think he actually will fall right between the goalposts of pick 27 and pick 59 somewhere. So I don't think the Ravens will end up getting him. He's a little slow. So that would be the hope that He might be a guy who would drop all the way to 59. But people, I think, realize, particularly after the Hamilton success at the number 14 pick, and he was, you know, the knock on him was that he had a little bit less speed. But it's an instincts position. So you want a guy who moves to the spot, knows where the puck is going ahead of the play, a guy who, you know, passes to or you know, skates to where the puck's going to be, if you want to talk about it that way. So I think Evan Worry has some learning to do at free safety. And by the way, polish for a college guy coming out is a bad thing when all other things are equal. I'll take unpolished guy over polished guy when all other factors are equal, like the coverage metrics are equivalent, and you have one guy who's polished and one guy's not. Give me the unpolished guy. I want to work with that. Give me the better traits as well, a better size and speed combination. Emin Worry has all of that with none of the polish currently as a safety, and I don't think there'd be any downside to the Ravens taking him there. Malachi Starks is another story. Now Malachi Starks is supposed to be an extremely polished back end guy, and I have never been through one draft cycle where I saw more excuses made for a single player than have been made for Malachi Starks. He's projected at the top of everybody's board. I mean, I understand I'm the different guy. I'm the one who has to explain why this is, but Daniel Jeremiah, Mel Kiper, the PFF guy, I think Dane Brugler as well, all have him really highly rated. The college statistics are terrible. You know, he's allowed almost 9 yards per target. I think it's 8.9 last year and 8.7 career. So it wasn't even that far off. People except the fact that he had a bad year last year. He kind of got taken to the woodshed by the Texas receivers in particular. But, you know, they don't acknowledge the fact that, hey, he's really not that great a free safety. It's not like he lacks some of the physical gifts. I think it may actually be that his instincts are just not that great. But anyway, the coverage metrics do not match up with his the physical gifts that he has. And I think I just do not understand the relativization of Emin Worry below Starks. I do not understand it. I think Starks is, in my book, he's a second round pick, but still a good player. And actually I'd be thrilled if the Ravens got him at 59. You know, he's not going to last that long, but I'd be thrilled. I think he will probably be taken first. And on draft night, if you're listening to the stream, my big response is going to be phew as soon as Starks goes off the board prior to 27, because it's going to be a big, it'll be a player who could have been replaced by Emin Worry by some other team. And they chose what I consider to be the wrong player. So anyway, that's enough on Starks and Emin Worry. Emin Worry, a moderate chance, I would say 50-50, maybe 55% to get to 27 right now. Could even be a little higher. There's so much negativity on him, but I do think the best chance for Emin Worry to be selected is for more of some quarterbacks to kind of frog him into the first round. It won't be the same position group, I don't think, other than Starks. So I think Emin Worry will be the second safety taken probably. And if that happens, I'll be thrilled, and I'll be even more thrilled if it's the Ravens who end up drafting him. So he's one of the magnificent seven that I'm calling for. Okay, so now we've been through four of the seven guys: Banks, Barron, Grant, Emin Worry. I go to the next one. That's Donovan Isiroko of Boston College. Love him as an edge rusher, and it is incredibly close whether it is Isiroko or Pierce. And if you go for Isiroko, you're going for a little more polish, I think, and there are risks that go along with that. But he's also got a few less personality flags, a few less comportment flags on his record. He just is not quite as great a pass rusher. 34-inch arms are terrific. He's a little bit undersized at 6'2", 248. His 22 bench reps are a little below par, even for the long arms, I would say. He had 57% finishes by the PFF definitions last year. Now that,
if you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, about takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Life can be chaotic. If you're running a retail business, don't let disorganized order fulfillment add to the chaos. Use ShipStation instead. With ShipStation, you never have to worry about shipping and fulfillment again. Whether you're running a business out of your garage or you have multiple warehouses, ShipStation is ideal for every phase of your business's growth. Save time with one login for all your stores and by automating repetitive tasks. Plus, you'll save money with the best shipping rates from global carriers. ShipStation's industry-leading features help you deliver a better customer experience. They'll get accurate and faster shipments, along with automated tracking updates with your branding. And with up to 88% off UPS and USPS rates, and up to 90% off FedEx rates, ShipStation is the fastest and most affordable way to ship. Calm the chaos. Switch to ShipStation today. Start a free trial at ShipStation.com/audio. That's ShipStation.com/audio.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
It's a little bit concerning because that's not sustainable. Okay, so he does not have enough. His pyramid at the bottom is not broad enough to support his sack and quarterback hit numbers. That is a concern. 57% finishes, that's, I'm defining a finish as either a contribution to either a quarterback hit or sack, as PFF has defined it. I'm giving up and tossing up my arms in terms of using their sack and quarterback hit numbers on this, because they'll give out multiple on the same play. But anyway, the 57% is, it's just not a sustainable level. A sustainable level, you know, 35% maybe. And that might even be pressing it. A lot of players are significantly lower than that. Now he was outstanding in terms of his run defense. He had 42 total stops and just 5 missed tackles. So at 8.4-1, he's a guy I like there. We're going to need a little more detail on these two because I think it's so close between Ezeraku and my guy, who I think I like a little better, but it's really close. It's really close. Hand placement is excellent for Ezeraku. So I he's a guy I really like, and I want to see him doing. He has the speed you want at the Sam position. And when I looked at edges, that's one of the really key things for the Ravens. They need to find other guys who can rush the passer on the side that typically has the tight end, the strong side, and also allow the Ravens the full pass rush flexibility they like to have, to rush off the slot, to rush an outside corner if you want to rush inside linebackers, by having that Sam linebacker drop off the line of scrimmage and provide some value in coverage. Tyus Bowser did a magnificent job of it. Matthew Judon did a magnificent job, but we're not asking for them to be either of that. If they could be 80% of what Tyus Bowser was and 90% of what Matt Judon was, that'd be fantastic. But anyway, he's a guy who might bring you those Sam characteristics. And I think he's already played 63.8 snaps per game for Boston College last year. I think he's a guy who the Ravens will depend on immediately for a fairly high snap count in 2025. So I think Ezeraku answers a lot of those questions. He'll be a situational pass rusher at times, but he'll also be a guy you can depend on first down. And the Ravens now, without Malik Harrison in the base defense, a player like Ezeraku is somebody they might really lean on for more snaps as a rookie, obviously depending on success. obviously depending on fatigue as that shows up during the season. So a lot of things I like about it. It's very, very close. I probably take him just a hair above the other guy, who's James Pierce of Tennessee. Okay, so this takes us up to the sixth player we've got here. Now, he had the highest pass rush productivity, and that's the stat that PFF has for looking at the combination of sacks and pressures divided by total times rushing the passer, and sacks are weighted slightly heavier, and I've forgotten exactly what the formula is, but it's applied uniformly, and in his case, I actually think the formula probably hurts him a little bit because he doesn't have a big high sack total, but he had 13.4 for his total PRP, which was number one in the entire FBS last year. Not just the SEC. Now, the other side of that is his close rate, his finish rate was just 21.8%, which is in the 12th percentile of the 408 pass rushers who had 200 or more pass rush snaps in the FBS last year. Now, that's not acceptable. By the way, we'll have a lot of these stats up on the stream on Thursday night, so please join us. You know, for pass rushers, I intend to be bringing this up, but I'm trying to create a tabular way to look at it. We've had mixed success as we've gone through this, working with a couple people who are trying very hard to make this work. But if it doesn't, we'll look at it in a graphical form of some sort that will allow you to see what these numbers are, stops to missed tackle rate, and some other things for edge rushers in particular. We have some stuff for corner and wide receiver as well that allow you to look at that. So please join us tonight anyway for the first round. It'll be a very exciting and Ravens-centric evening for us. If you don't join us tonight, that's okay. Listen tomorrow when this will be on Friday, when we hope this will be posted. Okay. So what else did Pierce do well? He was okay in stops to miss tackles at 28-7. So he didn't have a problem there. He was a pass rush specialist in 24. So they really had him off the field on rundowns, 60.1% pass snaps in 2024. He's got 25 coverage snaps in 24 and 62 career. He has the speed to play Sam. Pierce is a 447, by the way, and we're going to get into his pass rush in just a moment. So he's a potential Sam, but there are some red flags in terms of comportment, in terms of his work ethic that have come up during the process, and it would not shock me if the Ravens have him black dotted as a guy they didn't like during the interview process, as a guy they said, you know, hey, look, he's good, but we've heard all these stories and he didn't do anything to dissuade us that those were untrue during that interview we had with him. And I don't know if they did interview him, but they probably did. So anyway, he comes with some of those flags. Now, what does he come with otherwise that makes him great? Well, he's got this 13.4 pass rush productivity number. Where does he get it from? He gets it all from get off. He is basically the greatest snap timer in terms of college football. He gets off and he has one basic move that is a bread and butter. It's a half man outside, beat the guy to the edge move. And then how he exploits that and how he moves through on the half man there, he's got a little bit of variety. He can do a rip move. He can do arm over. Arm over is not really the great rip, a little bit of a dip, and he can do a chop. That would be kind of what I think of as being an arm over to the outside there. So he's got three different ways that he can win to the outside. What he doesn't have is any sort of effective counter. And I can't even begin to tell you how impressive that was to me, that he doesn't really win ever to the inside after almost always starting to the outside. By the way, you look through the tape, you're going to be able to find three or four wins to the inside during the season where he did something different or the play developed and he got free, moved to the inside and made a play. But it's not the common thing at all. The most common thing is go outside, be there quicker. And what that does is offensive tackles overset against him play after play after play. And that's something you really want to have happen. It's part of the value of get off. And get off is not measured, by the way, in any of the standard combine measurables. There's nothing that really tells you how great a player's get off is going to be. Even the jumps are thought to be an explosion numbers and whatnot. A lot of it is, you know, what foot you come off of. Do you fire off your front foot or your back foot? How does your brain process the information when they're watching the football and trying to figure out how to time that snap? I mean, there's players who are born with it in a lot of cases and some who can never learn. Dwan Edwards with the Ravens never really learned how to get off the snap in decent time. Sam Adams was born with it and was unbelievably unbelievably dominant during the Ravens 2000 to 2001 season. So in Pierce's case, he happens to be one of the lucky guys who has it. And when Chuck Smith works with him, he'll teach him a Euro step. He'll teach him spin moves. Those are counters that go back to the inside and will basically allow him to exploit the oversetting of NFL offensive tackles. And he's already proven he's better than any of those guys. Basically, there's almost going to be no athlete that these offensive tackles will face. Almost there will never be a time where there'll be an offensive tackle who's a better athlete than him. But there'll almost also never be an offensive tackle who won't overset against him because of the athletic difference. And so I think that Pierce needs to figure out how to exploit that. And when he does, he is going to be one scary pass rushing demon. And the tripwires on his way to that goal are mostly himself. You know, is can he keep his head in the game? Can he really determine that this is really what he wants to do with his life and be out there in the field? I have much more concern about that than I do about anything in terms of Pierce's ability on the field or how he'll be coached up to be a great football player. And the problem is you're 22 years old. He'll be 22 in October. So he's also one of the younger guys in the draft, by the way. Isaraku is older, but Pierce will be 22 in October. And 21-year-old men, 22-year-old men a lot older than that, frankly, can be pretty cavalier about how great they are at the thing they do very well. And they can take less time to prep for it. This is not a career which allows for that. So he's a guy who's going to have to do it. Ravens went through the similar player that I can think of that was really a problem. Actually, I can think of two, but Tim Williams was a big problem. Harbaugh hated him for the you know, practice habits, the work ethic, and all. We always wondered why he wasn't getting on the field, and then they just cut him. And it's not like anybody else picked him up for any period of time. He played, you know, had a cup of coffee around the league basically after he left the Ravens. So it wasn't. It wasn't that the Ravens were wrong about this. It was a matter of they had a guy who really didn't want to work. The other guy who fits this category is Jared Gaither. Now, Jared Gaither, there was all this. The flags were out there. Matter of fact, there was a whole flag corps around Jared Gaither waving red flags for the Ravens not to draft him. And he's a left tackle who went as a fifth round supplemental pick, being a guy who's 6'9", as you know, arms from here to tomorrow, and basically was great for 2 years for the Ravens in 2008 and 2009, a really terrific player. Other than the penalties, he was just about the best left tackle in the league at that time, but certainly one of the best. And in 2010, they decided, and I think part of the reasons was work ethic related, they were going to move him to left tackle, move Michael Orr to left tackle, move him to right tackle. And he all of a sudden developed an injury, air quotes, to his back and couldn't play. Well, nobody liked the explanation given at the time. I know none of the press corps liked it. None of the Ravens themselves didn't like it. And the Ravens actually were very fortunate that happened because he was cut or not signed, I guess it was, because that was actually his fourth season. He was not signed. And the Chargers got him, I think, on a one-year deal. He played four good games at the end of the 2011 season. And he got a four-year contract for, I think, $24 million from the Chargers right after that. And he stole that money. He was never to be seen again kind of thing. I look at these various memes and things you see where like a robot jumps into a well and says, I regret nothing. That's what I think of Jared Gaither's career. Couldn't have done more damage to himself. And James Pierce, if you don't take Jared Gaither as a cautionary tale or Tim Williams, and you're going to play for the Baltimore Ravens, you're probably going to end up in a very bad place in terms of your football career. So hopefully he figures it out and he stays with the program and becomes a player we hope he'll be. So I think we've been through six of the guys. The seventh guy is another interior defensive lineman. That's Walter Nolan of Ole Miss. High probability that he makes it to 27. In a lot of ways, he's the fallback school, the college you go to if none of the good schools accept you kind of thing. And that's a terrible thing to say, but Walter Nolan's a good player. He certainly deserves to be drafted in the first round. He's a little bit undersized to play nose, but I think that's where the Ravens would try and get him on the field on pass rushing downs. They would otherwise have him be a three tech with a larger nose on earlier downs. So they're going to have to find that nose tackle that goes along with Walter Nolan on earlier downs. They could try and mold him in an undersized nose where he plays about 15 pounds heavier than the 296 he weighed at the combine. But he's otherwise a guy who I think makes more sense to leave at more of a three tech role. His stops to miss tackle is the bread and butter for him. 16.0 stops per missed tackle in 2024. And by the way, if you can give me 16 stops per missed tackle, give me a few more missed tackles. I think 5 with 80? No, give me 10 with 160. You know, and he had actually had 32 stops and 2 missed tackles this last year. Career, his rate of stops to missed tackles, 14.4-1, which is by far, there was actually one guy better. Jordan Phillips of Maryland was the one guy who was better on the defensive line. But very, you know, exceptional interior defender. Had 72 defensive wins in 3 years at Ole Miss, or 3 years in college, I should say. 1 year at Ole Miss, 2 at Texas A&M. I think he, you know, if you look at him as a pass rusher, he pushes right through any half man block. I love that because he will cross the face of a guard on stunt under plays a lot and provide an opportunity either to the three tech or an end and or to the nose tackle or an end if he's playing at the three. And when he does that, he should be someone who can really take advantage of the fact that a player peels off, because he's much too powerful in terms of being able to hold by one half man block. And that's exactly what you try and do in those situations where you're in under. A lot of times, by the way, you think of the looper as being the advantaged player, but it's typically more often, I'd say, it's the underneath guy. It's the guy who is you know, maybe setting the pick. You think of, he's really trying to wedge himself between two half man blocks where he can then get a big advantage over the remaining half man block when he's done that. And so it's Walter Nolan is the kind of player who will take advantage of that. If they take him at 27, I really believe that they think they can mold him into more one tech play. So he'd be a nose tackle on some downs. He's, by the way, another guy be perfect for closing out football games with Matt Abike. And he's also a pick that very much addresses 2026 as well as 25. So Brandon Williams may be gone. Urban may be gone. Travis Jones may be gone, which would be just devastating to this team. But Nolan and Matt Abike, if they remain and there's another nose tackle inserted, and maybe hopefully they sign Travis Jones as well, that'll be a very potent defensive line that still remains. So those are my Magnificent Seven. Once again, going through them, and not in the order I originally gave them, but we have Donovan Isiraco, the edge from Boston College. We have James Pierce, the edge from Tennessee. Kelvin Banks, the offensive tackle from Texas. Jahdae Barron, the cornerback / free safety from Texas. Nick Emmanuori, free safety from South Carolina. Walter Nolan, the interior defensive lineman, whether he ends up at one or three, from Ole Miss. And Kenneth Grant, the interior defensive lineman from Michigan, who probably is another guy who ends up at one or potentially at three as well. But great set of players there. And I will be excited each step down the line as these players continue to make it through. I'll consider it a bad piece of news as each of them is taken. And in fact, the other players that taken may give us a lot of information about the likelihood to get one of these guys. And I do think two or three of them are likely to make it through. And it'll be very interesting to see how this ends up for the Ravens. I would also say the chance is probably about 70% that the Ravens take one of these guys. Two or three make it through. I think pretty darn high probability the Ravens take one of these guys. So might be slightly overestimating that. Might be, you know, Malachi Starks might have an 8% chance. There might be, you know, three other players who are have a chance to get drafted as well. But that's right. Finger to the wind. That's where I'd put it right now. All right, folks, thanks so much for listening. I have been posting on Twitter the draft stream, and join us for it live, please. It will be in podcast form starting on Friday at least, and looking forward to having you there. I'm really looking forward to interacting with Ravens fans. The fun of this whole experience is an interactive experience where I don't do a lot of stream shows, and this is one where I actually interact, take questions as we go and whatnot. We've got a panelist, an outstanding panel of people for all 3 days, but we really have some terrific guests planned, and we'll have 5 or 6 people there who are, you know, very active and interested in the draft, very highly focused, ask good questions themselves, are pulling good questions out of the stream. And also we're going to try to do an additional thing this year, which is to provide more analytics on the fly. And we're going to see how that goes. Bear with me on that. We've had some difficulties getting that set up, but I hope you'll like what we provide you in that regard. And I think it's something that it's different than what you'll find from other places that you can watch the draft. But your Ravens-centric draft experience here on the Film Study stream on Thursday night. That's it for today. Thanks, folks, for your very loyal listening. Happy football new year, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. Thank you.